You're listening to the cycling podcast coverage of the 2025 Lloyds Tour of Britain, sponsored by Lloyds. Last year, Lloyds joined forces with British Cycling and became the title sponsors of the country's flagship stage races, the Lloyds Tour of Britain for men and women. This year, the Lloyds Tour of Britain takes the riders from Suffolk in the east of England to Cardiff in South Wales over the course of this week. Some of the best riders in the world will go head-to-head to see who wins the final green jersey and succeed Stephen Williams as the overall champion. Thousands of fans are going to take to the roadside, creating a festival atmosphere all along the route. As proud partners of British Cycling, Lloyds wants to encourage people of all ages and abilities to embrace the joy of cycling, and the Lloyds Tour of Britain is a big part of that. So now it's time to join Graham Wilgos for coverage of the opening stage.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast.
Welcome to the Cycling Podcast coverage of the Lloyds Tour of Britain with me, Graham Wilgos. We're doubling up this week, releasing our Lloyds Tour of Britain episodes first thing each morning, while still continuing with our nightly episodes with on-the-ground coverage of the Vuelta España. Think of it as joining us for a full English breakfast or a full British breakfast with me and Lionel Burney from tomorrow. And you can, of course, still look forward to tapas for supper with Daniel Freeb and Brian Nygaard at the Vuelta. Joining me today, though, as our guest presenter, I'm very happy to say, is EF Education Easy Post Director Sportif, Tom Southam. Tom, welcome to the Cycling Podcast.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here. I've long said this is the test match special of podcasts, so it's an honour to be here.
We're very, very happy to have you in for a ton. We hope you are. You're back fresh from the Vuelta, aren't you, having taken the team to the first rest day? And so we thank you. Thank you not only for joining us, but thank you for joining us on what should be a rest day for you too.
Yeah, I was about due one, but I mean, watching a race from home is a rest day compared to being in the car. So not too bad. I will confess, like when I watch races on TV, I do often have a bit of a siesta. So some small blanks, but you know, all good.
All of the best races sort of deserve a little siesta in there somewhere. I was going to say that there is no EF representation at the Tour of Britain, but that's not quite true, is it? Because we saw a young man today from your feeder team, from your development team, Josh Golliker, representing Team GB, animating the break. We'll get into that, but just give us a quick line on why it doesn't feature, why the Tour of Britain doesn't feature in EF's calendar.
I mean, it has in the past. I've been there with this team, I think as late as 2020 might have been the last time I'd done it, before everything sort of paused for COVID, and that unsettled our rhythm a bit. We were here quite consistently for quite a lot of years, but at the moment, it's obviously a very, very busy part of the year, time of the year.
Yeah.
And there's, with teams in Canada, with obviously, you know, a team at the Vuelta, teams doing the Italian races, plus our infrastructure now includes, as you said, a developments team and a women's team, which all use the same vehicles. So we've got a lot of moving parts. Unfortunately, the Tour of Britain hasn't featured this year, but, you know, in the future, hopefully, we'll be back.
Hopefully. And as I say, Josh Golliker, who we will come on to shortly, doing you proud today. We should do a quick overview, Tom, of where the race will be going for the six stages that run sort of east to west, don't they? We started in Suffolk today. We'll be there tomorrow for stage two as well, before moving west across sort of Buckinghamshire, Warwickshire and into Wales. So it's Woodridge to Southwold today. The Stowmarket stage is stage two, so we remain in Suffolk. Then it's Milton Keynes to Ampthill for the sort of transitional stage three and four. I suppose you could also call it something of a transitional stage as we head sort of slightly further west, Atherston to Burton, Dasset Hills Country Park, big Hollywood finish there, before we get into Wales for Pontypool to the Tumble for stage five, and then finishing with a stage that's set to celebrate the career of Geraint Thomas in his final Tour of Britain, Newport to Cardiff. And I should mention as well, visiting the tumble along the way. But let's start with today. So Woodbridge was the race start on the banks of the River Deben, not far from Ipswich in East Suffolk, snaking up almost as far as Lowestoft and darting back down to the coastal town of Southwold on the Suffolk coast. Tom, know anything about Southwold or its famous famous inhabitants across history?
Well,
I wouldn't blame you if you didn't.
I mean, Lowestoft is where my grandfather was born, and so I don't know if he counts as a famous inhabitant of the area, but he is famous to me. My grandfather was born, grew up in Lowestoft. But that's about the limit of my knowledge of the area, being from the very deep southwest of the country myself. So
yes, of course. George Orwell, the journalist, novelist and critic, lived in Southwold in the 1930s, and it was where he completed his second novel, A Clergyman's Daughter, in 1935. More famous, of course, George Orwell for Animal Farm and 1984, which made the line "Big Brother is watching you" famous and gave us Room 101, among other things. On to the famous names that lined up at the start today. Do you want to pick a couple out? Because it's a I always think the Tour of Britain sort of comes at a strange time in that you're not at the Vuelta, and you typically get a few sort of big names from the Tour de France, and you get people who are sort of riders who have either not achieved or have achieved what they wanted from the season, and this is a kind of bonus race, or you've got riders who are on the up and really starting to look to make their mark among some big names.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a few star attractions there, but as well with the Worlds coming, don't forget, in a few weeks, it's been a feature of the Tour of Britain, people coming to get ready for that. I mean, obviously, Evenepoel jumps out. He was there last year as well, and he was sort of in the mix, not at his very, very best, like you said. I mean, he's coming off the Tour de France and so on and so forth. Mm. Matt Brennan, obviously, you know, he's won 11 races this year. He's one of the absolute stars of the season so far. Probably, you know, a little bit more exciting than Olav Kooi, as good as he is for, you know, British fans. It'd be nice to see him competing for a win if he gets a chance. And then, obviously, Geraint Thomas is the big draw card for, I mean, the whole race. Finishes in his hometown. Sign off for him. I'm not sure. I mean, watching the race today, it was pretty evident that he's going to be playing a bit of a team role through the race. I think, you know, in pro cycling, there's a bit of sentimentality, but not enough that a victory goes that way. There are a couple of names that jumped out. And then, obviously, another big one is Oscar Onley, fourth at Tour de France, big favourite for me for the race with the climb finishing on the tumble, and he's come with a pretty, you know, organised team. They're obviously well up for it. I could see by the way they raced today, you know, they're going to go all out for the win. So a few good names there, I think. And then, like you said, a whole host of, I mean, you could see it today in the bunch. There's guys riding for teams on, you know, which is a rare sight. You see a guy riding for Picnic on a specialised bike, and you're like, of course it's Stagiaire, there's young guys that are getting a trial, it's that time of the season. So it's, yeah, a bit of a mix, but a good start list, I think.
Bit of a mix, but all the more sort of pleasing on the eye, with a few sort of curiosities in there, and all the better for it. Tymon Arensman for Team Ineos, two-time stage winner at the Tour, and Theo Gegenhardt for Little Trek, in there as well, as he sort of continues to make his comeback. Should we get into the stage itself and the story of the stage, Tom? So it was, as we say, Woodbridge to Southwold, 161.4 kilometres, a high pace to start. A small break of four riders made their way up the front, more or less as soon as they could. Visma Lisa bike on the front of the pack were keeping the four-man break around the two-minute mark. So that four-rider breakaway was Victor Verculli for Team Flanders-Balois, Milan Lanhove, his Flanders-Balois teammate, Diego Uriarte for the Kern Pharma team, and, as mentioned, Joshua Golliker for the Great Britain national team. So you had four young riders out early, and they seem to be working really well together.
Yeah, I think. One of the features of the Tour of Britain is that it often has quite narrow roads at the start of stages, which means that it's actually quite easy for the bigger teams to block the road. Which I'm not sure is always the best thing, because the brake goes quite quickly and it's quite easy to close the road. I mean, I remember back in the Sky days when Ian Stannard was still racing, he'd basically just closed the road himself, and you kind of had to tap him on the shoulder and ask if you'd go in the breakaway. And we saw a similar sort of thing today. They sort of shot off. Golica was the last rider to get across. And then I think Top Sport guys, this is a huge race, and they always race particularly well in the Tour of Britain. I remember years and years ago, Thomas de Gendt riding for the same team and doing the similar sort of thing, going down the road, winning the King of the Mountains jersey, which is a target, and then just sort of making a name for himself and getting going. And Uriarte is actually, I don't know if you remember, but he won a really good stage early in the year of one of the Spanish races where he chipped off quite late and took a really nice win for Kern Pharma. So actually like a solid group that did roll well together. There was a bit in the middle of the stage when they started to, because there was one rider from Visma pulling. They sort of started to actually eke time away from him. Sort of went 2 minutes to 2:30 to 2:40. And then Visma obviously had to bring Glogan a bit later on to sort of speed up. I think at the Tour of Britain, with only six riders in a team, if you want to sprint and you're getting no help and you have to do a lead out later on, you need to be sure you can manage those groups really, really well.
Yeah, for sure. So
five riders, I think, would have been, you know, when they did the meeting in the morning, they would have said five riders max in the break. Once it was four, all the sprinters teams thought, great. Obviously, the pressure on Visma with Coy here. Everybody turned and looked at them. And then behind, quite quickly, the teams got organized and got sort of... Aja Desir were immediately in sort of second place on the road, which at the time to me didn't make sense, but the finish made a lot more sense. So it wasn't like... I mean, they were into it quite quickly. And the chase was, I would say, quite sustained. They rode very well in the front. And I think... Yeah, I mean, 30Ks to go, things sort of changed with the other teams coming up, but yeah.
Yeah, before we got to that point, we saw a couple of bits worth mention. So I'm going to mention Framlingham Castle, because that's the castle that Ed Sheeran refers to in his song, The Castle on the Hill. That was at about 73 kilometres, where that A team of four still had a gap. So they kept about 2 minutes, 2:30, but they had a gap of about 1:48 by that point. 56 Ks to go, and the only King of the Mountains points of the day on offer were on Mill Hill. Josh Golliker went long, but he was beaten to the punch by Milan Lanhover. So Lanhover taking maximum points there. Golliker with three, Victor Verculli with two, and Uriarte with the remaining point. In quick succession, we had the intermediate sprint with 43 kilometres to go. Same dynamic, the same outcome, with Golliker winding it up, going long, and Lanhover beating him to it once again. We're getting towards the point of the race when we were turning back towards the coast here, so back into a headwind. We saw... I mean, what did you think, Tom? For me, it was a brave break, but they were always going to be wound back in. And like you say, Visma Lisa bike on the front, they were kind of policing it all day. And you seem to have Picnic Post NL looking after Oscar Onley and keeping him high for most of the day too. How did you see it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was sort of, it did seem doomed. I think there is a nice thing for those guys to have, you know, a mountains jersey out there, which is always a good thing to go after. But like for a break like that to work out, you'd basically have to ride really slowly, force the peloton to ride slowly and then accelerate much later. I mean, it has happened at the Tour of Britain where the early breaks, you know, stayed away. But with the conditions as they were as well, you know, the opposite of the small roads at the very, very start, there's quite big, quite fast flowing roads into towards the finish. And what you tend to see is a lot of teams, and there's a lot of teams in this race that are just experts at holding a position and holding a high pace with that position. So Picnic and Uno X you know, they're always at the front of the bunch and they're always pushing. So you've got Visma riding and then the other teams come up, and as they do it, the bunch goes across the road, and that just increases the speed so much that it dooms any sort of breakaway. Even without, you know, the bunch appearing to be in a line and hammering down the road, it's just like this build up and build up and build up. You've got the GC teams in there, you know, Geraint Thomas was in person on the front, keeping people out of trouble. That increases the speed. I think it was always sort of destined to be a sprint. You would have needed a lot of wind, you know, or something to split the race up, but it wasn't there. I think it's okay to start off with a sprint on stage one. It's kind of gets everybody into it, and yeah, it was the result.
Given
where
the race was in the UK too, with East Anglia isn't exactly famed for its for its climbs, its vertical meters. So it was always going to be a very difficult job without sort of serious headwinds for the break to stay away. But Victor Verculli gave it his best shot. So three out of the four from the break were caught with around 16 kilometers to go. But Verculli was the last man standing, and he held a gap of around about the 22nd mark all the way through to 5.5 Ks to go when, like you say, almost inevitably it came back together for the sprint. In between that happening, we saw Geraint Thomas, again, you mentioned, we saw him on the front with a flat tire with about 8 kilometers to go. He was quick to rejoin after a bike change. Which brings us to the final corner with 350 metres to go, plus a little rise. I think there was a little rise to line too. We saw Ineos up there for Sam Watson in the British champion's jersey. We saw Alberto Dainese for showing his interest for Tudor Pro Cycling. Team Visma Lisa Bike were sort of muscled out of it at one point and then muscled their way back into it in that final kilometer. And Matthew Brennan did a fantastic job leading out Olaf Coy. But the real surprise came on that sort of that final right-hand corner when we saw the most almighty launch from Tord Gudmundsdatt for Decathlon Azur d'Azur La Mondiale. He came from, I want to say, and keep me honest here, Tom, 11 riders back and absolutely hammered up the left-hand side.
Yep, that's absolutely correct. Because I counted on the corner as well. I had a good look at that. It was a very impressive sprint. He took the slingshot out of the corner, so he was already sprinting for, I would say, he would have done a sort of close to 300-meter sprint, which is a long sprint given that it was slightly dragging uphill.
Yeah,
and he wasn't far off taking the honours.
It was nearly glorious. It was so nearly glorious. In the end, Coy had too much quality. He was so well positioned, and they'd fought to position him there too, Visma Lisa Bike, and he had just enough to pip Gudmundsdatt to the line. But it was some effort, a sort of serious chapeau to Gudmundsdatt for, you rarely see that. You rarely see that kind of real slingshot launch from quite that far back.
No, and I'd kind of like, once Visma, like 900 metres to go, they had three riders on the front. I thought, this is going to be very, very straightforward for them. But in the end, he gave it was a good run for his money, which was good to see. And often you have sprinters who are like, I was too far, and like they don't really commit and give it as good a shot as they should. But he was obviously hungry for it, and he went after it and nearly beat his new boss the next year. So
does that play a part when you get to this time of year? Obviously it doesn't, but it must play on your mind sometimes as a rider.
I mean, it's in people's minds, and I certainly wouldn't have been in the sprint, but afterwards, you know, Coy will certainly have woken up about, because, you know, once you go into that situation next year, he's going to turn up and want either him to lead him out, which he probably is what he's, you know, thinking about at the minute, or all of a sudden you have somebody else who can sprint, and then you have to have different race programs. And so, I mean, it's early days for that, but it was interesting to see the two of them.
Yeah, it was a thrilling sprint finish, really, thanks to Gudmundsdatt's efforts all the way to the line. So Coy picks up where he left off in 2023, where he bagged four wins. He will go into the leader's jersey. Gudmundsdatt, as we say, a heroic second. Hugo Hofstetter for Israel Premier Tech in third. Tim Torn Teutenberg for Little Trek in fourth. Alberto Dainese for Tudor Pro Cycling fifth. Sam Watson for Ineos Grenadiers sixth. Tom Crabb, Team Flanders Baloise, in seventh. Alexander Kristoff, if things go very, very well for him, he could be looking at his 100th career win. However, it's given his competition, it's probably unlikely. However, he was up there, top 10 for Uno X Mobility. In ninth, Rory Townsend for Q36.5, and Jules Hesters for Team Flanders Baloise again in 10th. So Coy takes the race lead. He will be in the green leader's jersey tomorrow. Milan Lanhover in the blue King of the Mountains jersey. In the points jersey, of course, Coy takes it, but it will be goodness that wearing it tomorrow. And Milan Lanhover in the white young riders jersey. But the combativity award today went to Joshua Golica, thanks to his efforts in the break. This one's voted for. So it's possibly a little unfair, given he wasn't the last man standing of the break. His nationality might have counted.
It's never fair, this competition. Like, it's so unclear how it works in race to race. And sometimes you can feel a little bit, you can feel a little bit hard done by, but other times, yeah, it works out. I'm happy that he got it. Good on him.
He was
the last one across to the break. He got there. He gave it a good crack for the mountains and the sprint. I had the feeling, I'm not sure, I haven't heard anything, but he sprinted like for the wrong line on the KOM or in the wrong place. It looked like that was a bit of an odd sprint. So it'd be interesting to hear about that.
Yeah, we'll get his thoughts on that at some point, possibly tomorrow. So on jerseys, Tom, Lloyd's isn't just the lead sponsor for the Tour of Britain. It's our lead sponsor for our coverage of the race. And that's why the leader's jersey is green. It's Lloyd's brand colour. So a couple of facts on leaders of the race while we're here. 2014 had... The Tour of Britain 2014 saw the most race leaders with six. 2005, did you ride 2005?
I did.
Do you remember Nick Noyens topping GC from start to finish?
Did he? We went on stage one early. Yeah, it split in the wind. There was 20 of us away.
I was worried my research wasn't 100%
right,
but that's good news.
I remember.
And Edvald Boasenhagen holds the record for most days in the race lead across the 2009 and 2015 editions, although Olav Coy will be giving him a run for his money. One name absent from the start list we should mention is Stephen Williams, Israel Premier Tech rider Stephen Williams, last seen racing in the Spring Classics, DNF'd in all three of La Flèche Wallon, Liège, Bastogne-Liège, and the Eschborn-Frankfurt Classic. So Stephen was Tour of Britain winner last year. I asked... had a quick chat with Israel Premier Tech earlier today just to get an update on where he's at and whether we might see him racing again this season. He's still suffering from the tendinopathy issue in his knee. IPT say they're currently exploring options to aid his recovery. They will know more next week, all going well. But for now, it's probably best to say that he's still sidelined and working on getting back to racing. And they confirm that it is highly unlikely, they say, that we will see him race again this year. But we wish him well. Tom, on the Tour of Britain's history, you rode not only the 2005 edition, as we just said there, but the first edition of the sort of rebirth of the race in 2004, didn't you? I mean, we're going back away.
Yes.
We said before we started recording, it's unbelievable to think it's 21 years ago.
Well, yeah, I mean, to think that there's guys in the peloton who weren't born then, that's the tricky thing. But yeah, 21 years ago, they restarted the Tour of Britain. I'm pretty sure it was five stages. I'm pretty sure it was quite short. And I feel like it came together quite late. Like I have the feeling that through the season, we didn't know if it was going to happen or not. And it did come together, but it wasn't. Yeah, I mean, it was far away from the race that we see today. 21
was
years
it? Am
later.
I right in saying it was quite chaotic because it came together quite late?
Yes. So I remember the first stage they sent 50 riders off course, more or less, inside the final 2Ks, I think. And Zanini, who ended up winning the stage, basically was just like, oh, I'm here, I'm going to sprint, and took the win, because half the bunch went the wrong way. And then we had a stage to went through Blackpool, and I distinctly, like, somehow we ended up in open traffic, and I distinctly remember, like, riding along in what I thought was the peloton and seeing, like, groups of riders coming from different roads, like different side streets, like coming from the right, coming from the left, and there were cars everywhere and cyclists absolutely everywhere. And we had a bit of so it was the first time that European teams had been over to the UK for quite some time, and there were big teams. There was Quickstep and I think maybe Postal. It was nothing like you would have these days. We just kind of had a bit of a chat in the bunch, and then I think Roger Hammond or Charlie, because there wasn't many British pros then. I think there was five British pros then.
Charlie Wagelius, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a very small group of us, and the Europeans, like, it wasn't common that they spoke English. So they had to kind of go through Charlie and Roger and kind of go to the race organizer, what's happening, what we're going to do. And then they just sort of restarted us, and we got going again, and it kept going. And I think everything else sort of passed without incident that year. And then 2005 already, they took a big step forward. And then from there, it completely, I think it was the fact it just came together so late, and like road closures in the UK are much more complicated than it is to do in Europe. Mm. Basically, because there was a very small group of us that were European based, it was all our fault, to our colleagues in the peloton, which was fun.
Yeah, a lot of stick for that.
I remember David Bramati, who was at Quickstep, basically Italian, quite loud, still a DS at Quickstep, seeing the breakfast buffet with baked beans and sausages and so on and so forth, and like literally standing there in Italian and screaming at the top of his lungs, does the Queen have to eat these beans for breakfast? Blah, 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 blah.
How important was it to your career, Tom? So you would have been a young rider then. You'd have been in your early 20s.
Yes. So I was on the cusp of a pro contract then. I rode with Great Britain the first year. Oh, no, I was in an Italian team already then. I was already riding for an Italian team. But I rode for GB in the first year. And then in the second year, I rode for a pro team. But for me, it was, and I looked at it as like my opportunity in the year. Partly because I was more motivated than other people. Partly because I saw that at that time of the year, even like the big riders were a little bit slower. So you could legitimately put yourself in front of Salvadelli on the results sheet, which was still, you know, important. And it was kind of, it was a very important race for me back then. It never really, you know, worked out to change my career, but it was, especially when you raced in Europe all the time. So I raced in Italy a lot, where, you know, you didn't get the opportunities. The winners were going to be, you know, who they were going to be. And you came to the Tour of Britain, it was a different style of race, which wasn't necessarily dictated by a massive mountain or huge, huge bunch sprints back then. And one of the things I liked about the Tour of Britain was the fact that you could, you know, go into a break on one day, that, and the six-man teams meant that it could stay away, you know, the race could change, and it gave opportunities to a lot of riders. So I was certainly very, very glad that it got back on the calendar.
And does it continue to have that sort of same importance for the British scene? Not necessarily for British riders, because as I think as a British rider now, you've got far more opportunity to go and race in Europe. You don't necessarily, your sort of career trajectory is not necessarily hooked on the opportunities you will get at home. You will find those opportunities elsewhere. But as a kind of the wider racing scene, I feel like the Tour of Britain, it maintains that kind of, it's important for the UK to have a flagship race.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things I sort of was looking at today was the fact there's no British Conti teams there. In the years when I was back in the UK and I was riding for Rafa Condor, the Tour of Britain was our, you know, flagship race. But there was, you know, four or five teams then. We had a good, healthy scene. There was plenty of riders. They were competitive in the Tour of Britain, and it gave a lot of sponsors the exposure they needed. And with, you know, the scene sort of withered away, I think, in the UK, for it to relaunch and for those teams to come back and sponsors to come back, they have to have a race like this. That then gives a much bigger platform for more riders to be riding, you know, at a higher level, even if based at home. So, I think it makes a massive difference for that. I think, you know, what was it, 2013, 2012, around there, when there was like the domestic scene was really at its height. And the Tour of Britain, yeah, it was a massive part of that. Now there's no teams. I don't quite know.
But we did see today the GB team.
Yes.
So just briefly talk us through the sort of selection process for that. So what, in effect, why are sort of riders like Josh Golliker and Ben Wiggins, who obviously have their own trade teams, and yes, we've mentioned that EF has no presence at the race, and therefore Josh is able to ride for the Great Britain national team today, similar with Ben, is it that straightforward? If you don't have sort of representation from your trade side, you can sort of go and race for your national side?
I mean, the first thing is that's like, it's a UCI rule that you obviously can't be in the same race in a national team as your trade team, for obvious reasons. And I think Matt Bramier would have, you know, he's based the team around young guys who are looking to, you know, get that opportunity to take a few steps forwards in their progression. I think that the GB team's always kind of at this race has been like that. And it's a fantastic platform for those guys to do that. If you just do the Worlds, or you just go to the under 23 World Cup races, you're not going to get the same exposure to those pro riders that you're with in this race. So they've done really well, the Great Britain team here. I remember, I think 2008 we did it with Ian Stannard, who was a young pro, and he ended up getting third on GC on the last day, I think we got it, which, you know, obviously helped him move on in his career. Even though he was a pro, had he gone to another race in Belgium with Landbouwer credit, it wouldn't have been the same motivation or opportunity that he got riding the Tour of Britain. That then allowed him to take another step forward. I think he went to ISD the next year or changed team, and, you know, he ended up having a fantastic career.
And that brings me to Matthew Brennan, and I think he's worth mention. Obviously not riding for the Great Britain national team. He was, as we said, leading out Olav Koy in the sprint today. There was a lot of talk, or there has been a lot of talk up to today, over sort of who will have what responsibility. Olav Koy was interviewed after the stage and asked whether he will sort of, you know, allow Matthew Brennan to take his turn. And he said, in effect, that they were just taking it stage by stage. The feeling before today was that Olav Koy would be the main man for the first two stages, and then Matthew Brennan will be allowed to sort of be the protected rider, if you like, or be the number one man. 20 years old. Can we see... I mean, there is a world in which Koy and Brennan absolutely clean up this week and don't leave anything for anyone else.
There is. I think Visma have a pretty good track record at this race, but, you know, they come and they take it seriously and they send very good riders here. So they're not coming just to fulfill, we've got to tick this box and go to this race. They come and they send and they want to win. I think that the thing about the Tour of Britain, like I said before, is the race can always turn at any moment in the Tour of Britain. Even though there's flat stages, it could be that it's just Koy in sprints or just Koy and Brennan in sprints. But I could equally see a situation where, you know, the race did split and I could see Brennan being strong enough to be there and defending, you know, even to be a super high GC. So I imagine they've, at Visma, they're kind of thinking for him a bit bigger picture, a bit longer term. Let's see how far he can go. Let's see how deep he can go. With Koy, let's get some sort of wins in the bag, like you said, stage one, stage two, and then see how we can turn things around. It could always be interesting for seeing how Brennan goes over the whole week.
For a rookie World Tour season, he's been about as impressive as anyone I can remember. I think I'm right in saying that only Tadej Pogacar, Tim Merlier and Mads Pedersen have won more. I mean, you mentioned the fact that he's got 11 wins to this point, four of them World Tour wins this season too. We saw him riding in the service of Wout van Aert at Paris-Roubaix in the spring. We've seen a little bit of a sort of role reversal at the Deutschland Tour last month, where it was almost like van Aert took him under his wing and he was sort of playing mentor to Brennan. He took another stage there. In fact, he outsprinted Jonathan Milan, for goodness sake. So in terms of his prospects, he's worth getting excited about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I still love the fact that it came together through him having to replace someone at the last minute to go to Catalonia.
And he took two stages there,
which I don't think even the team was expecting. I think cycling can work like that. You know, you get one break, the same as, it happened for Ben Turner, another British rider at the Vuelta, who was supposed to be, I think, at the Tour of Britain. But him and Lewis Hamilton have swapped, I believe, with sickness. And then you end up, and it changes the trajectory of your career. Whatever the case, Brennan's kicked on and has backed up a fantastic start with a fantastic entire season. And I think it's only natural that riders like Van Aert see someone young with so much talent and want to be involved in helping them get better. And in a team like that, with the right guys around him, the trajectory is good.
Van Aert said, I think, after the Deutschland Tour that he's only just 20, Matthew Brennan, but he rides and talks, or he races and talks like he's 30. In your opinion, who would you liken him to in terms of his style? Because we've seen, who am I thinking of here? It was Robert de Groot, who recently told, and he told Het Laatste News, in Belgium, that he isn't a pure sprinter. He's very, very fast. Some people call him the new Sagan, others the new Cavendish. We prefer not to do that. Obviously, they don't want to sort of pigeonhole him, particularly this early in his career. I'm not necessarily asking you to pigeonhole him, but in terms of style, what sort of rider do you think he could be?
Versatile sprinter for me. He's already much more than a sprinter. To win the stage he won in Catalonia the way he did, it's clear that he's more than just a pure sprinter. And people change as they develop, as they get older. He will become something that perhaps he's not now. Psychologically, people change with big bunch sprints. Perhaps they don't want to do big bunch sprints anymore. And they want to sprint from a small group, or, you know, all sorts of things can change. But I think at this young juncture, I mean, when you're 20, you just want to do everything, right? And you just go after absolutely everything and you just take what you can get. That probably gets refined a bit. And then he'll probably be more targeted towards races where, a versatile sprinter can win, I would think.
Well, we will be keeping an eye on him this week, hopefully in your good company, if you can. This is still to be confirmed, yes, whether or not you can join me and Lionel on the pod tomorrow. We hope that you can, Tom, but we are incredibly appreciative of you making the time to join us today. Just in case we don't get you back tomorrow, what does the remainder of the season hold for you back to the continent?
I'm off on Friday back to Italy. I've got 5 one-day races out there, the first block of like the autumn classics out there. It's strange because it doesn't feel like you're getting towards the end of the season, and then all of a sudden it's like, those are my last races for the year. So getting ready to have an off season.
Which I'm sure you're looking forward to. I always think after the pressure of the tour, and for obvious reasons, all roads lead to the tour. That's not to sort of do down anything that surrounds it, but everything is so sort of high octane and high voltage at the Tour de France that it must be nice, and it must have been nice at the Vuelta this past sort of 10 days, just to be able to be part of a grand tour, but feel like the pressure is off a little bit, particularly after the success you had at the Tour de France as a team.
Absolutely. And I think, today I was watching the Tour of Britain and I was like, oh, I got like a real feeling of like, oh, that does look like a nice environment to be in again, instead of like, because the Tour is extreme high pressure. And I was like, I was looking at the Tour of Britain and firstly, they finished before 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, this is genius. Everyone's going to be finished their work tonight. Everyone's going to eat dinner at a civilized time, especially coming from the Vuelta when you're, you know, we arrived at the hotel one night, like 9:30 after finishing a stage. So yeah, everything's different. It is nice to be a little bit more relaxed and take things in. But yeah, it did make me a bit nostalgic that when I was watching the finish line there. I was like, oh, that's nice.
Well, look, whether you join us tomorrow or whether you don't, thank you again for your time today. But we hope that you do, and good luck for the rest of your season. As I say, myself and Lionel will be back and taking you all the way through to Cardiff and Newport, or Newport and Cardiff, I should say it that way around, to wish Geraint Thomas well in his final race, all the way through to the end of this edition of the Lloyds Tour of Britain. Tom, thanks again.
Pleasure.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,